You're listening to Heart of Mind, Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis. Heart of Mind is a central source for health, consciousness, spirituality, and self-liberation. The theme of today's program is giving voice to the indigenous spirit. And I'm sharing with you an excerpt from a conversation between Shannon Crossbear, Jim Graywolf Petruzzi, and Sue Blight, originally recorded for the Welcome to We Show. This discussion is sparked by recent revelations about mass unmarked graves of Indigenous children killed at a residential school in British Columbia, Canada, giving rise to talk of genocide, systemic racism, and generational trauma. You can learn more about this discussion and the 11 campaigns for global unity for We the World at we.net. You can volunteer, get more information, get involved, and begin to make a difference. Our guests, Shannon Crossbear, articulates her purpose as to demonstrate and promote gentle healing. She expresses her commitment to healing through her work. Her own community and family history propelled her to develop leadership in order to address disparities that have led to poor outcomes for friends and relatives. Shannon's work has included facilitating and consulting with the National Indian Child Welfare Association, the Federation of Families for Children's Mental Health, Georgetown University, the National Child Traumatic Stress Network, and was the co-director of the National Dialogue on Adolescent Substance Use Disorders. She has worked with tribal and non-tribal communities in providing technical assistance to systems of care and circles of care utilizing traditional interventions and the promotion of culturally congruent and trauma-informed practices. Jim Graywolf Petruzzi is an author and speaker of the White Otter Academy, wisdom from the past magically stirred with knowledge from the present as a catalyst to transform your future. And Sue Blight is doing what she can to ensure a livable earth for her 8 grandchildren and their future grandchildren. She's coordinator of We the World's campaign for environment and founder of the Climate Collaboratory, a pilot project of We the World and the University of Florida Extension. Now we're going to pick up the conversation midway and carry through to its conclusion. Thank you for joining today, Heart of Mind, Radio for the New Millennium.
Everybody know and nobody tell. Little wheels spin and spin. Petty thieves, the five and tens, then the big wheels turn around and around. Little wheels spin and spin, big wheels turn around. Blame the Jews or your sister Kate. Teach your children a heart of hate, and the big wheels turn around and around. Little wheels spin and spin, big wheels turn around and around. Little wheels spin and spin, big wheels turn around and around. Turn your back on weeds you've hoed, silly sinful seeds you've sowed. Add your straw to the camel's load, pray like hell when your world explode. Little wheels spin and spin, big wheels turn around and around. Little wheels spin and spin, big wheels turn around and around. Swing your girl, fiddler say, later on, pipe a bay. Do-si-do, swing and sway, dead will dance on judgment day. Little wheels spin and spin, big wheels turn around and around. Spin and spin, big wheels turn around and around. Little wheels spin and spin, big wheels turn around and around. Little wheels spin and spin, big wheels turn around and around.
I think it's great. I think the more models that people have, you know, the more curriculum, you know, things that they can embed, the better. Right? That works in a certain community, but I was thinking about all of this and like, how am I going to get my relatives to kind of participate in this? Honestly, like, you know, we're on the res, we're just trying to figure out how to eat. And, you know, and so one of the drawdowns might be around, well, we're going to change the way that we eat. Right. And if you have no possibility of that because of the systemic kind of issues that you're dealing with, that doesn't work, right? I mean, you know, so because, yeah, it's, and I don't mean to be throwing that in there. I want to be sure that as we're, continuing to build other pathways, roadways, systems, that we don't kind of make the mistakes of the past and actually create more or kind of solidify some of the systemic issues that we already experience. I don't have no solutions for that. So Sue, it's just on my mind. It's just it's in my thinking. It's in my awareness that when I look at something and I think, how does this contribute? Or how does this, move us toward we, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a response. Let me ask if Jim does first.
No, I like what Shannon just said. Yeah. How does it contribute? That's the big question.
Okay. So my thought is, first of all, Shannon, is a platform like this something realistic to promote on your res?
No.
Okay, then we can stop doing that. What I think is that those of us who are making the mess need to be the ones to clean it up.
Yeah.
And so we can, you know, promote it to people who are maybe not even aware of the mess that they're helping to make, you know, like my family here. I keep trying to say about the lights, you know, turn out the lights when you're not doing, you know, because I've explained to the grandsons about how that puts pollution into the air. When you don't turn off the lights, it's helping to warm our planet. And still they're not doing that. So, I just feel like there's an education, a level of education that the dominant culture needs to take care of. And that may not be at all what people that you live with are in need of. And so having another conversation about what it is that would be appropriate there, and help to find the people like you, be mm-hmm. able to help spread that word. And so that's what.
Yeah, I actually, thanks, Sue, that was helpful. So for me, just even as you kind of pulled that up, I thought, well, where there were several different things that I'm like, oh, I could plug into that very easily because I'm already doing that. And I might as well, you know, put that out to the world. But then also the other thing that came to my head is there might be another place, you know, just as you created the climate stories section there, that there might be some other places to do things. But yeah, I just have to acknowledge that I'm particularly sensitive this week, just because I'm feeling the effects of all my relatives that are having reactions to the 215 bodies found. And not because it's any new news to any of us. Like, we have known this. We know this in the States. We know Carlisle is, when you go to out to Carlisle out there in Pennsylvania there, that you're literally, the road is made up of the bones of children. And so, and what's happening is that because there's a heightened awareness now throughout a dominant or mainstream society, then it's an added burden for all my tribal relatives, you know, and I've been spending literally hours on the phone, you know, with people that I know that are my relatives from Canada that are just really having a hard time right now, hanging on because of the trauma that is bringing up for them, and continues to bring up for them, and the frustration. And then also that, just what you were saying, the onus being of educating, being on those people who are most ill-equipped to do that education while they're in the middle of their own grief, right? So it's, I say that because, you know, that kind of explains my kind of hypersensitivity to all of this is I'm kind of sitting with that this week, and it's really hard for me not to be distracted by that, you know? Yeah.
And I read about that, and I don't know that Brianna probably, because she's of that culture as well as you.
Yeah. And, she knows.
And, you know, Caradwyn coming in or others coming in probably, or may not know that story. And I wondered if you could let us know about what.
Yeah. That is, so
it's upsetting. Yeah. You.
So in British Columbia, there was a residential school that they recently found the bodies of about 215 children, and that were killed, that died during their stay at the residential school. In Canada and in the United States, there was an agreement between the educational system, the US government, and different religious groups to educate, to civilize, to what they consider civilized, the native peoples, the indigenous populations. What that meant was that children were taken away from their families and they were brought to these schools. These schools were not good places. there was so much abuse that happened, physical abuse, mental abuse, sexual abuse. And there were literally thousands of children that died. And those children were both in the US and in Canada. The main churches were the Catholic Church, the Anglican Church. There were other churches, of course, Methodist. There was all kinds of churches because it was, you know, these schools were paid for. And so as a child, that's why even when I was growing up, you know, if somebody came to the door, whether it be you hid the children, that's the first thing you did. And the second thing you did was you never let them inside your house, because after it was the educational system, then the second one was the welfare system. And that still is being done today. So the last boarding school that was, there are still boarding schools. Flandreau has a boarding school. There's several BIA, Bureau of Indian Affairs boarding schools. They're under, since the education and, Education and Language Act, I think it was in the late 1970s, then those were taken over in terms of self-sovereignty by there was a Indian Education Act that came through so that Native people had a little more control over the education system of these schools. Anyway, there probably is not many Native people in this country who do not have at least a relative that was in a boarding school. And most of the children did not come home. And they have never, that's never been acknowledged. It's never been recognized. It's never been talked about. And in this country, in the United States, that continued to happen in the welfare system and still does to some degree now, but with the passing of the Indian Child Welfare Act in 1978, it shifted the onus of responsibility for the children to the tribe as opposed to the state. So what that meant is that if somebody said, we don't think you're treating your children right, you know, it's neglect or whatever their determination was, they literally would take the children, terminate the parents' rights, and adopt those children out to non-Native families. And so in 1978, they passed a law that said the jurisdiction of the child belongs to the tribe, not the state. So, however, this is where systemic racism comes in. So now the tribes had jurisdiction over the child, but they had no money, no systems, no foster children or foster parents, and no way to pay for it. Every state had block grant funds that went to their welfare systems, their Department of Human Services, that actually paid for things like care of children, foster care, you know, those kinds of things, training, support of the child. But now the jurisdiction went back to the tribes, and the tribes had nothing. So over time, some of that has changed. There's been some other things that have been put in place. But what happened recently, which is what kind of this period of time is about, is that these bodies were discovered and they did some autopsies and, you know, what they could do. And they know that these children died by ill means. They didn't die from illness. They died from murder. And so, and I think what's hard is if you've been, as a Native person, if you knew this and you grew up with this knowledge and you've been trying to get people to hear it, is now you have few people who are hearing it and they're absolutely shocked. And they're like, oh my God, how come we didn't know about this? Well, that's another way of, when you talk about genocide, invisibility is genocide. So not being able to tell that story, even though that story has been here for generations, and not being able to tell that story is, And having that story finally be heard by a few who are now shocked by it, it just has all these kinds of actions, all these kinds of reactions. And so what's happening right now is in our tribal communities in the United States and Canada, and now, you know, kind of bouncing off into other places where these things have happened. Yeah, it's just having an effect, right? Yeah. So, and what, and the opportunity, and I'm trying to hang on to this one, is that the opportunity that we have collectively is to be able to acknowledge that, so we can take the first act in reconciliation, which is acknowledgement, which is truth telling, right? So the truth telling is happening, and that gives us an opportunity to kind of truly grieve the loss and to send these little spirits on their way, right? So that we don't have to do this again, right? So it's always hard when we think about our children, right?
Shannon, thank you for giving voice to that story. I'm so grateful to have you in this group and to know that we are in the period of what you call mending the sacred hoop, that I call creating peace on earth, right? That it's all the same process. And so I would like to hear next what you said, that the process of hearing it is the first step. I would like you to just talk about mending the sacred hoop and how, what the progression would be. What is it that we want to have happen because of this event? And I have to tell you that when I read that, my thought was, well, that was 100 years ago. And it's not.
No.
It's not. And so I wonder, how recent was this?
Hang on a second. No, it's not 100 years ago. It's in my lifetime. You know, it's in my lifetime. It's my, it's my cousin Bernie, who's still to this day, you know, it's my relationships. It's like, you know, I had a very important, he's passed now, his name was Roger, and he was kind of my half side, my love of my life. But we could not be together in a healthy way because of his experiences of being abused in, you know, in a residential setting by the priest. And, you know, it affected his whole life. It affected his whole life. And it affected his relationships with other people. This generational legacy, this generational legacy shows up in death rates. It shows up in addictions. It shows up in unhealthy lifestyles. It shows up in, think about it this way. When I'm doing work, sometimes I do work with early childhood and tribal communities. And when you think about, Sue, sometimes three generations, these boarding schools, first of all, you didn't get your parents. You were taken away from, you have no idea what it means to parent. You have been torn away from your traditional parenting. You've been put in an institutionalized setting. There is no parenting going on. You get out, you have a family. You've never been told, I love you. You think that love is in the bedroom. And now you have children. And those children have never heard, I love you. Because you never heard, I love you. Except in a sexual context. Then you have the sexual abuse that has gone on. If that's the only way that you've been introduced to, you know, now we're talking two and three generations down. So it's not what happened then only, it's what's happening now as a result of that, right? So sometimes when I'm going into a community, we have to talk about what does it mean to be a parent. That's why when I talk about those coming of age ceremonies and all those things, why they're so important, that reclamation of all of that, because you have three generations now that have no idea what it means to be in a healthy family. No examples, because that's not what they were exposed to, right?
So it's a good question.
I think the first thing is that acknowledgement and this, and allowing ourselves the space to freely grieve. You know, first you have to have tears, right? Part of our ceremonies, and Jim, you're probably familiar with the wiping of the tears ceremony.
Oh, yeah.
You know, first we have to have the tears. We have to be able to like feel that heartbreak, mm-hmm. feel that these little innocent children torn away from their families that were murdered. You know, I mean, it's a little overwhelming. I'm going to quit for a moment here.
You know, can I take over for a minute?
Please.
It's really interesting. Well, first of all, I have two friends who are products of that.
Yeah.
And one of them escaped the school. To this day, he can't stay anywhere for longer than 6 to 9 months. He has to move on because he still thinks they're chasing him. He knows intellectually they're not, but in his whole being, he still feels that. Even though he found his way back home after a couple of years. I have another friend. She lost her daughter. Her daughter went into the school and disappeared.
Yeah.
And what's so, well, there's several things horrific about this, but there's, I believe, 400 of these schools out there. So they're about now to go to all the other schools and study the land and see what else they find, because this was a common grave. At least a lot of it was a common grave.
Yeah.
The other thing that's so horrific is every time we open a ceremony of any kind, we always talk about, I know I do, whenever I open the directions, it's always, we're doing this to help to heal the sacred hoop wherever it is broken. Wherever it is broken is a key thing, because this is not just us. It's not just here. Other people too. I talked to my friends in Africa. Similar things are going on. I talked to my friends in Australia and New Zealand, the Aboriginal people, same thing. Children taken, put into schools, educational camps, they were called down there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And disappeared. And so this is, as each culture, I think, has to grieve with itself, we need to grieve together. Because this is part of what we've done. As humans.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
So what would that look like? I'm thinking about telling this story in a way that is appropriate or manageable by young children. I mean, we're working with some 8 to 12 year olds. How can we tell this story about mending, you know, and being open? I don't think the children would need to hear all of the, you know, or maybe even go through, maybe they do need to go through hearing it, grieving it, and then dealing with it. But I want to really focus on what we as a human family can do to make this better. And I hear you saying, Jim, we need to.
It's part of uniting again.
Do this process together.
Darkness is definitely falling, moving so slow I'm barely crawling. Here I sit, dirt on my hands, lying way out in the shadowland. Made my bed and here I lie, try to hold my head up high, lying to myself sometimes, bad decisions, but I won't cry. Been down a long and twisted road, sensing myself at a record low, do anything just to get ahead. Now it's all quiet here in this shadowland. In my shadowland.
So in the Truth and Reconciliation, the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation.
Yeah.
One of the things that they talk about is that reconciliation is a process of healing relationships, right? And it requires first public truth sharing, an apology, and some kind of commemoration that acknowledges and then and some redress of some kind. Yes. So there's never been the things that are missing are all of that, right? There's not really been a public truth sharing. So that, I think that would be an important thing. And then an apology. The apology has not been forthcoming from, especially in the United States, there's been no apology.
And
Australia. And yeah. In fact, in New Zealand, just so you know, I have a young friend who is an Island Pacificer in New Zealand, and they just signed a petition for a particular truth-telling and apology to go to the Island Pacificers and what was done to them in terms of education. So yeah. they just gave it to Parliament. It had 7,123 signatures that they got in a very short period of time. So hopefully that'll happen. But So what would it look like if we actually did that, right? And I think that, you know, it's doable. Whether we put we create a space or allow, not allow, we, that's the wrong word. But anyway, we have a space where we can acknowledge and commemorate, right? And I think we do tell young children. I think we tell everybody, and we can tell it in a way that is trauma informed, and meaning that we can tell young children there was a time when people did this, they treated each other badly, and this is what happened, right? I mean, we can tell that story, and this is how we get better together. This is how we help each other. This is how we love each other, to acknowledge that whether we're farther away from that experience or not, that all peoples have experienced this at some point in time. And that is why this is part of the hallmark of colonialism, right?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there has to be, I think another thing they say in Truth and Reconciliation is that there has to be an action on addressing the ongoing legacy of colonialism. So it has to do with education, culture, language, health, child welfare, justice, economic opportunity, and prosperity. And a number of years ago, in 1987 or 89, this was in Canada, but there was a call for a study to be done on violence in Indigenous communities, right? The ministries got together and said, we're going to fund this study. The grandmothers from all four directions in Canada came together and said, oh no, you are not going to do that. You are not going to study violence. What we're going to do is we're going to create a healing strategy. And they developed a healing strategy called Breaking Free. And that healing strategy looked at what it would take actually to do what we're talking about doing, to fund it, to address it for every age group, at every dimension, justice, education, that exists. 17 ministries in Canada signed off on that Breaking Free, but not $1 was allocated to actually implement it. That's institutionalized racism. That is creating more harm than good. And so that's what concerns me, is that everybody is going to rally around this, but not actually, and feel bad. Everybody's going to walk around feeling bad. Oh, it's a terrible thing. Why didn't we know it? Oh, that's so bad. So, you know, and maybe there's some trauma bonding that will happen as a result of it. Or I call it trauma porn. And that doesn't move us where we need to be moved. It's actually more harmful, because now you've opened the wound and you said, oh, gee, isn't it bad that we have a cut here? But they don't treat the cut, right? So my hope is that we actually will create the actions. But I think the starting place, Sue, is to do the truth telling. And we have to do it in a way that is completely safe for those telling, knowing that we're the ones. It's like, tell us about your hurt. Tell us about we have to make sure that that isn't creating more harm. Mm-hmm. We have to do that in a trauma-informed way.
Thank you.
You know, these are interesting times for this too. And we can talk about this here. Well, for me personally, since I'm a mixed blood, it's interesting because I have several of these traumas, including my Romany Gypsy blood, which my Romany Gypsy ancestors were almost eradicated.
Yep.
And then find out I have Native American blood, and then find out I'm part of that story too. So I look at it from different perspectives, I guess. But what I really find interesting, and I keep watching and I think about, and I've talked to a few elders about, look what's going on in this country now. Black Lives Matter, which I am 100% in support of, and they also have their wounds to heal. But why is that only happening with Black Lives Matter? Why have we never had a red equivalent? Now, no one wants to stand up now and say Red Lives Matter. That would be demeaning to everybody.
Right.
Why is it that slaves brought here, as horrific as that is, and what was done to them too, they've managed to stand up and suddenly it's starting to be redressed. We're even starting to see apologies. For the first time, we have a president go to one of the slaughter sites. And yet nothing done with what was done to the Native people. And I saw a very disturbing thing just last week. part of the answer seems to be monetary once again, because if the government and the powers that be start to recognize what was done to the native populations, who are the ones living here when the rest of the settlers came, what would the cost be? How do you make reparations for taking away all the land? Do you give it all back? Do you give them all the money that's been made off of it? Do you give them all the natural resources? And that scares the powers that be. And I thought about that, and at first I thought that's nonsense, but the more I thought about it, is that's part of it. I know it is.
It's part of it, Jim, but here's another part that people are not aware of, is that of any grouping of people in the United States, we are a different, we have a different political status.
Yes.
We are in the Constitution of the United States. In the Constitution, it says that the treaties are the supreme law of the land, that the agreements with the Indian nations is the supreme law of the land. It's in the Constitution. And so we have a different political relationship than any other ethnic group in the United States.
Yep.
And as a result of that, there, of course, was some, like you said, the fiduciary responsibility of the federal government. We have a different political stance, which means our justice is different, which is what happens with the murdered and missing,
right?
Because we don't have state jurisdiction. We have federal jurisdiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're considered nation states, mm-hmm. you know. And the other thing that's different in terms of groups, of other groupings of people, is that certain populations aspired to be like the European population.
Yes.
They aspired to have equality. In our tribal communities, we never aspired to be like the European people. We never aspired to an equality that had no bearing, because it was, you know, that's like not even a thing. So there's a different kind of framework in terms of the world relational view and how we kind of conceptually, how do they say it in the English, cosmology, our way of looking at the world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that creates a distinct way of looking at things differently, right? and aspiring to a different thing. So those things put in place in a Western construct that would allow you a pathway to quote unquote equality, things like education, right? Which is a big thing in our African-American communities. I mean, every yes. child, get your yes. education, get your education, get your education.
Yep.
You know, make your money, get into the nice house and get into the, you know, let's make sure we're economically sure. viable, right?
Yep.
And those are not values that are within our tribal communities. That's not what we're aspiring to have, you know, except for the kids that want the fancy tennis shoes, but that's all good. You know, bingo tonight. all my relatives, so if I win, so, you know, it's the everything within a individualism, colonialism way of thinking about things, is that you're trying to rise above, right? What is the value? What's the biggest thing that you could, what's the coolest thing you can do as a Native person? Give everything away.
Yep.
Right? I mean, that's like, you know, you got something. Here's my blanket. Here's my coffee. Here's my tobacco. Here's my whatever. You know, I'm going to have a giveaway. Everything in my house leaves, right?
Yep.
So it's, that's so alien to other populations who have, who don't think that way, you know?
Well, yeah, no, that's true. But why does that stop the asking forgiveness by others? Why does that stop preparing the soil so we can grow again?
Well, we ask, you know, I think that's that whole thing. We just, you know, okay. It's got to be, I'm trying to get myself into the mindset of people that are different than me in terms of the thinking, right? So the only thing I can think of is that it's threatening when someone isn't in your game, right? It's threatening, you know, if what you're trying to, let's just say you're, I'll use a whole different analogy. Say you're a blackmailer, right? You're a blackmailer, and the person you're blackmailing says, okay, so what? I don't care. Go ahead. You know, tell what you're going to do. I mean, it takes all the wind out of your sails. You don't have any. And that's what's so frustrating, is that if you're trying to exert power over somebody and the other person just doesn't, you know, accept it, how frustrating is that? You know, I kind of reminds me of one time when when one of my sons was acting up, you know, and he was, you know, 16 or something. He was hating on me at the day, and he was standing in the, it was horrible. He was standing in the living room and he was like, I hate you, Mom. I hate you, Mom. I hate you, Mom. And I'm like, okay, that's okay. I get it, Patrick. You hate me. What you don't have is the power to make me hate you. You can hate me all you want. I get it. I understand it. But you do not have the power to make me hate you, which is what is was that was ultimately the most difficult thing for him, right? Because he was powerless. And that's what the United States government has had to deal with us as tribal people, as you are powerless to make me think like you. So, anyway. Okay, I'll take a breath down. I'll get down. I'll stand. I'll, you know, step down from my little
box.
Thank you. Thank you for standing up there. And I am truly grateful to hear what you have to say. And Jim.
Thanks. Well, I mean, all this work needs to be done now. If we don't get done some of this work, it's hard to move into the next stages.
So, Jim, I want you to know that I honor your ancestors. And every time I get in my wagon, I think about both the gypsies and the tinkers and all the other travelers, right?
Yep.
And always acknowledge the misunderstanding of peoples everywhere, right?
Yeah, all the nomads.
Yeah.
It's all of us, all of we populations who were the nomads.
Yeah.
Who were the ones who migrated. Because isn't it interesting? We're starting to come up against that again.
Yeah.
And no one knows exactly what that's going to look like, but we're already seeing the migration start because we altered the earth.
Yeah. And I, for myself and my own trauma, I have to untangle things, you know, because of the hurt, right? And recognize that, you know, that other people are hurt as well. So, because this is the part, Sue, is that is really kind of how do we tenderly, gently, and supportively move together, right? So that I'm not making, I'm not seeing other people as enemies, right? Even though I understand that the systems that were put in place are what have caused harm. So I think we have an opportunity right now when we talk about this in a systemic way to kind of move beyond that, you know, that personal, we all have individual responsibility. I'm not saying that we don't. And that we were put in an environment, that we were the fish, the goldfish in the water, so to speak. And so if we're in the water, you know, we have to recognize what the water is made up of, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me as a tribal person, I'm dealing with learning about truth and reconciliation and forgiveness, right? And, you know, how do you sit mm-hmm. across mm-hmm. from the person who has caused you harm and truly forgive so that you can move to the next place? And we have great examples of that from what happened in Africa, in some places in Africa, right? With the apartheid.
Yes.
Yeah. And we have some other places where that happened. And I am reflecting back on kind of what happened in some of the tribal communities in the far north internally when there was conflict within, you know, you live in a grouping of, you know, less than a few hundred people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And things happen and things arise. And I'm trying to think about how those things were dealt with, right? When harm was caused. And one of the examples that I think of is that there was a young man, he was probably about 18 years old and 19, something like that. Anyway, he showed up at my door. He was looking for my half side at the time, but he showed up my door and he had just killed his wife. He hadn't meant to kill his wife, but they were drinking and he pushed her and she fell and she hit her head on the edge of a table and she died. And so now you had the death of the young lady. You had the young man, 18 years old. You had his family. You had her family. You had this evil act, right? This act that created this harm. And so, you know, now the law, of course, did get called in that time, and he got sent to jail or to a prison for a couple of years, just a couple of years. But when he got back, there was a whole set of protocols that were put in place that he was responsible for the rest of his life, for the family that he had harmed, you know, and the community as a whole. That was a different way of, they didn't demonize him. You know what I mean? It was just such a different way of dealing with it. There wasn't a demonization. There was a recognition. There was an understanding that harm was done and harm needed to, you know, there was no way to bring back that life, but there were ways to be able to move forward, you know. So I'm thinking about how to apply some of that as we move forward when you're talking about, well, so what do we do in terms of there's not going to be, they can't give all the land back. They got too many people here, right? And what would that look like? You know, so I'm sure there's smarter people than me that can figure that one out, but yeah.
I'd like to share what's coming up for me with all this. Going back to the Pacha story, I'm wanting to tell it for these 8 to 12-year-olds. In a way that they can feel like there's something they can do about mm-hmm. this. And mm-hmm. so, again, the story of mending the sacred hoop, I think, is central to it. And showing what that looks like, where it's broken. You've got, boom, these stories. Boom, there's Tulsa. boom, there's these schools.
Yeah.
You know?
And remember, it's not just humans. This is the entire sacred hoop. This is nature.
Right, okay.
Animals, this is everything.
You've been listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis. Our discussion today, Giving Voice to the Indigenous Spirit, was provided by Shannon Crossbear, Jim Graywolf Petruzzi, and Sue Blythe, the special guests for today's program. The music we featured is Frog Dancing by David Anthony Clark, Little Wheel Spin and Spin by Buffy St. Marie, Shadowlands by Bruce Hornsby, and we're going to conclude in honor of the lost children, Sunrise Prayer by Douglas Spotted Eagle.
Шалчин нэшонгу баданусын.